Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and earned degrees from MIT and George Washington University. He's been a scientist, assistant prosecuting attorney, a probate juvenile judge, a businessman, and a minister. He and his wife, Marcia, have 12 children and 20 grandchildren, and he's a real-life Renaissance man. His name? Randy Heckman, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Randy Heckman, an amazing man. One of the many things he's done is he's the founder of Michigan Family Forum. Randy, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It is a great honor to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I was born, raised in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Kind of a simple upbringing, an older sister, two younger sisters. Just attended school there through ninth grade, and then my dad's job moved us to Wheaton, Illinois. So I did high school in Wheaton, and then went off to college in Boston at MIT.
What's the biggest thing, Randy, you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Well, for my mom, it was love. Be kind to everyone. She was just a most gentle heart. I really miss her. She's been gone for a few years now. But she never had a bad word to say about anyone. And my dad had a lot of good things. He was a hardworking man. He knew lots of people. But one thing that I think is pretty important for today is it's easy to borrow. It's hard to pay back.
How does a young man from Grand Rapids and then Wheaton, Illinois, mm-hmm. which is a suburb of Chicago.
That's true.
How does such a person get to MIT?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I went to a very small high school. It was a private high school in Wheaton. I had 62 in my graduating class, and I did not graduate at the very top, but I was, you know, I did okay. But I think it was really a science fair project. I've always dabbled in science. I've been an amateur radio operator. In fact, I dreamed one day if I could just have a driver's license, a pilot's license, and an amateur radio license at the same time, heaven would have descended to earth. That would have been it. Well, I got all three of those, and yeah, life still goes on. But I did like to mess around with electronics and other sorts of things, and had a science fair project in high school. This is back in the 60s. And it was before computers, but you would speak into a microphone, and out of the other side would come a light bulb. As you would say the word white, and a white light bulb would come on, and red, a red light bulb, and so on. So it would interpret speech. This is, again, before computers.
From 69 till 72, you were in the U.S. Navy.
That's correct.
What did the Navy teach you about life?
Well, it was a great experience. This, again, was during the Vietnam era. I was just married. My wife was teaching before our firstborn came along. And I don't know, as far as what it taught me to work hard, because I was also going to law school at night times, five nights a week, except for summers. That was only four nights a week. So working full-time in the Pentagon in the area of computers and systems. But, again, hard work, the fact that God works through authority. I learned that lesson while I was there in a kind of an interesting way. And you know, there's a bright future if you do work hard and apply yourself.
I have had the privilege a couple times of going on the big stick, the Teddy Roosevelt, the nuclear aircraft carrier, landing.
Yeah.
You know, they got 9,000 kids on that ship.
Isn't that amazing?
90% of them are under 18. Mm-hmm. The teammanship. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, for real, for real. Again, I was in an office with a lot of civilians, and I was on a ship actually between my junior and senior year of college as a midshipman in ROTC. But as far as teamwork, you know, I had 20,000 people in the Pentagon and lots of offices and so on. But it was still a fascinating time. a time where we worked hard. I was in a special project where we really saved taxpayers money by purchasing computers that we had been leasing, and actually got to testify in a congressional subcommittee about that purchase. That was fun.
You come back to Grand Rapids, you do some legal work, and then for 15 years, you sat on the bench as a probate juvenile judge in Kent County.
That's true.
Tell us about those 15 years.
Yeah, that was fascinating. I was young. I was 27 when I ran as an assistant prosecutor. Not real happy about what I saw at juvenile court. And that's really why I ran, to make changes in juvenile court. So that was my goal, was to respond more consistently and firmly to juvenile crime. And saw kids, of course, that were abused, neglected by their families. We handled adoption cases. It was a fascinating time of seeing families and people close up in need.
Juvenile crime, Randy, has skyrocketed from the time you and I were kids.
Yeah, that's true.
Why and what can be done?
Well, what a court can and must do. You see, when you look at the statistics, if 100 people commit a crime in a certain area, maybe half of those will even be reported, and maybe a third of those will even be apprehended, and far less than those will actually come to conviction and so on. So even if you're 100% successful in turning around the 1% or 2% that actually committed the crimes, you're still not touching the rest of them. The way to touch the rest of the people is there needs to be a deterrent value to the court system and to the justice system. That is, there needs to be some certainty that there will be a negative consequence to crime. Unfortunately, that is just the truth. If they didn't give speeding tickets, I know me, I would be speeding, and many people would. So there is a value of that, and that's what courts need to do, is to have a more consistent application of a fair but a firm consequence to crime.
We're talking to Randy Heckman, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Randy Heckman, and from 1975 to 1990, he served as a probate juvenile judge in Kent County, Michigan. Randy, when you and I were teenagers, the trouble we could get in was minuscule. You know, we had to traverse firecrackers.
Right.
These kids today, what the devil has to use, it's landmines.
Yeah, no, that's true. And, you know, a lot of that, Jack, is because of the family breakdown. So many children, you know, 70% is a nationwide statistic in some communities, and certainly 40% across the country of children born to single moms. And in some parts of the community, it's you know, there's 90% single parent families, whether moms or dads, typically moms. And kids need a father. You know, we had this notion back when we had a war on poverty, back in Lyndon Johnson's era, that you could replace a dad with a check. And that's just a lie. We dads are important to our children. We're important to reinforce what's right and wrong and help our kids to grow up and have good character. And so, you know, I think a big part of the problems that we have in our urban areas especially, but really across the country, even in suburban areas, is it's just a lack of family, lack of learning. I mean, it's not the schools that need to teach this. It's the family that needs to pass values on to their kids.
I've heard a number of times that the biggest thing a dad can do for his children is to love their mom. Why?
No, that's true. You know, that's the statistics show that, I mean, kids want to be loved and they need to be loved. But if they can see that bond between mom and dad, that just gives them incredible security. And again, it's that's not easy. I mean, I've in some of what I've done, both as a judge and later as an executive pastor of a church, you know, I've married people, and that's one thing that I emphasize is you know, it's two best friends doing life together, and in my opinion, it takes the power of God to really keep that bond working. I'm just going to be very blunt with you. My wife and I have been married 41 years, and we work at it. But if we couldn't pray and seek the help of God in our marriage, I hate to think what would happen.
Are you still in training?
You better believe it. Every day. I mean, it's life is a process. You never arrive in life.
Yes, dear. I think that's all we have.
Yeah, there you go. But it's so good. It's sweet. It's sweeter now than it was when we got married. It's just, and that, again, credit to God. I just thank him for that.
Randy Heckman, in 1990, you founded Michigan Family Forum.
That's true.
What is it, and why did you form it?
Actually, it was a group of folks formed it, a board did, and they were looking for an executive director. And they kept coming my way. And my wife and I looked at each other. We said, this doesn't sound like us. And but just, we thought about it, prayed about it, considered it, and we went ahead and started it as first executive director. And what it is, it's a family policy council, is I guess it's generic term. It's in Lansing. It's designed to interact with our legislature and with our governor with the hope of trying to make things stronger for families in the state. Because families are the basic building block of any society.
You and Marcia have 12 children.
That is
20
true.
Grandchildren.
Yes.
Since 75, arguably, you've been dealing with children and families.
That is so true.
What's the single biggest piece of advice you'd give to parents listening tonight? Hmm.
Well, there's many pieces of advice, but I do. I've given talks. My wife and I have both given talks on this. And again, I'm just going to speak personally. What I consider to be single most important thing is, you know, they say in real estate, most important thing is location, location, location. I would say the first three things are to pray, pray, pray. I'm going to be honest with you. I think at the end of the day, I think that there's a lot of parents who might say, I wish we had spent more time on our knees crying out for our kids. And very few are going to say, well, we wasted our time doing that. And again, I just believe I've seen that work, because you're talking about imperfect parents raising imperfect children to grow up and know how to work, know how to have a marriage of their own and raise a family of their own. And that equation really doesn't translate too well. And so you need an outside force, it seems to me, power of God, to give you that wisdom and that courage that you need to day in and day out, not just let your kids grow up on their own, but you have to invest in those kids. You have to be a parent, not just a friend to your kids. You have to set an example to your kids. And when you blow that example, you've got to get down to their level and say, I was wrong, the three hardest words in the English language, and be real with your kids and ask them to forgive you. Now, some dads especially think that if they do that with their children, their kids won't respect them thereafter, and that's a lie. Kids know that their dads and their moms are not perfect, and when they're real with them, that actually helps for them to just see that and just maintain that bond between you and the child. There's things that interfere with that relationship, and two of the biggest ones are guilt and bitterness. And when you notice that in your kids, to deal with any guilt, if they've done something wrong at school or with their kids or whatever, with their friends, to get them to own up to it. And if they have bitterness against you, against your spouse, against another kid or a sibling, they got to deal. That's poison for the soul. And so these are just, again, there's so many things that one could say, but you got to be on task. You can't be so absorbed as a parent in your own career, your own life, that you just kind of say, well, kids can grow up on their own. They are not blank sheets of paper. They need parental input.
I heard a nationally known family counselor mm-hmm. give a speech recently to 500 couples.
Sure.
And at the end, she said, if I could leave you with one thought, the thought is no. One word. Learn to say no.
Sure.
Tough love. So many of these single moms,
yeah.
Randy, it's so hard for them to have tough love. What do you say to single moms?
Well, again, that's a challenge. Let me just follow up for a moment on your statement. In fact, statistics have shown there's two things that kids would love to change about their dads is they wish they wouldn't lose their temper, and yet they also wish that they would say no and hold to it. Kids want limits. Now, they will never tell, a 16-year-old especially, will never look you in the eye and say, please, set some limits for me, Mom and Dad. In fact, they'll say just the opposite. But they deep down know that that's their safety in that mom and dad looking out for them and helping them. So to the single mom, I mean, my heart goes out to the single moms, and there's so many of them. But I'm also going to speak to the men, like men in churches and men who are maybe uncles or grandfathers, whatever, to invest. If you see a woman you're related to, or that is a friend or associate, whatever, that is raising a child, especially in the teenage years, come alongside, volunteer to be a mentor to that child. We need to see more of that in our society. We can't just go our separate ways. I mean, we're coming to a time in our country where things are just breaking apart, becoming fragmented, and it's time we have to fight that tendency, and we have to lean in and help one another. And this is one important area where men can do that and volunteer to just even spend an hour a week with some of these kids and get them through those tough times.
For 6 years, Randy Heckman, you led the Children's Bible Hour, CBH Ministries. Mm-hmm. Tell us about CBH Ministries.
That is, it's a 60-plus-year-old ministry located in Grand Rapids, but it's an international in scope. It produces media materials, radio materials and programming, and written materials just to help children, for the most part, with biblical stories and moral stories to help them navigate life.
If you want to learn more, go to www.cbhministries.org. Up until very recently, you've been the executive pastor of Crossroads Bible Church.
That's true.
In Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. A major church. What's been the basic message of that church?
Oh, the church, it's a fun place. And I came there, again, a little over 5 years ago, about 6 years ago, actually. And I'm the administrator, executive pastor, so I don't do a lot of the preaching, but I do the administration of it, and we've seen the thing grow. But the real message of the church, if you had to boil it down, is that we want to just help others to know God, certainly, and to really everyone have a street corner where we reach out to our neighbors and the people around us and draw them in to what God wants for them. And it's about 30% college-age students. Total, we got two campuses. There's about 1,800 people that show up. And there's just a lot of life there and a lot of reality. Just it's okay. God's real. We're real. It's okay to be real. And so the word is, let's go. There's a lot of needs in this world. Let's not grow inward. Let's not have a holy huddle. Let's reach out and meet the needs of those around us.
Randy Heckman, if there's a listener tonight that said, I've fallen away from the church,
mm-hmm.
because of the economy, my mistakes, my flaws,
oh, yeah.
What do you say to that listener?
Christ himself said, come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. And so he invites us. I mean, he meets us at the point of our need, not the point of our perfection. And so, that's exactly the one. I mean, you just look through Scripture. The people that he accepted are the ones that were outcasts, the people that were hurting, the less than the others, the publican, the prostitutes, the ones that are hurting are the ones that he accepts. It's the religious ones that think that they've got it all together, the proud that he rejects, actually. We got to come to him humble like a child.
We're talking to Randy Heckman, and he and his family recently made a major decision in his life and their life. We'll talk about it when we come back. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Randy Heckman, who recently announced his candidacy for the U.S. Senate from Michigan. I mean, that's a huge step, Randy. Why did you do it?
That's, in a sense, an easy question. In another sense, kind of a hard question. I mean, government has always been in the back of my heart, ever since, actually, my days at MIT. I remember my senior year at MIT just thinking a friend of mine was going to go to law school and was telling the rest of us, his friends, about why he was going. It just, some of that struck me. That's something that I need to do. And I thought, but wait a minute, I'm not sure I want to be a lawyer. And that seems kind of interesting. But then I just thought, government. And I just said, yeah, that's the call. So, again, I was a judge for 15 years. And actually, my move to Michigan Family Forum, at the back of my mind, was to be able to move from Michigan Family Forum back into a governmental position, maybe even run for governor, to be very blunt. That was in my mind. But didn't really end up going that way. Ended up doing some other things. and some that we have already talked about. But back in mid-December this year, just really almost out of the blue, I just had this almost a download from God. I'm just going to say it that way, but just a real sense that this is an important thing that has to happen, that we as a nation are moving toward a financial and economic turmoil and oblivion. And, you know, we do have a large family and a lot of, you know, grandkids. And I just really sense that there's not the will in Washington, D.C. at this point in time to really reverse the direction we're going. I think most people feel that we go another 5 years spending as we are, much more than we're taking in as a nation, and it's lights out. And so putting all those things together, just this sense of call and then talking to people around me and confirming that, and almost it really was a surprise as I talked to my wife, talked to friends, talked to others, that this began to just really gain traction in my gut. And just a few weeks ago, we made the announcement, we're going for it. And I'm excited. I love doing it.
Your basic message to all Americans is, and I quote, sacrifice and courage together.
That's right. That's Please. Absolutely true. It's what it's going to take. If you look at the $14-plus trillion debt that our federal government has at this point, as you look at actually the declining number of people in the working group that are providing taxes and so on, and a growing number of us that are in the baby boom generation that are going to start sucking away, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and other things, it just doesn't work. It's you know, I mean, there's two options we have. One is just to say, well, that's the way it is, and for us older ones to just turn this over to the younger ones and say, well, good luck, and it's just untenable. So we are going to face some issues. We are going to face some pain. It's going to require some sacrifice on all of us. But if we do it together, like we faced back in 1776, our forefathers, you know, those farmers in 1776 actually had something better to do than to pick up a musket and chase some redcoats around. But they said, we have to do this. We'll either hang together or we'll hang separately. That was one thing they said. We could mentioned many times in our history course, Jack, but World War II comes to many of our minds. Time and again, you say, forget our differences. We have to join together to face the what we're facing both in the Pacific as well as in Europe. And we did it, and we survived that experience. Well, we're coming upon another huge crisis, and I can't overemphasize what it is. And again, it doesn't feel, it's not like an army is invading us. We can physically see it. But trust me, under the surface, economically, we are facing something like we have never faced in our lifetime. And it's going to require sacrifice and courage together.
Most everybody I talk to agrees the spending is unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, we have to sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, others have to.
Yeah, there you go.
I sacrifice. Randy, I'm paying enough taxes.
Yeah, I know it. Well, we sure are. And I'm not talking about raising taxes either. My sense is that we're taxed enough. In fact, in the year 1900, the average family paid total local, state, and federal taxes 5 or 6% of their income. The year 2000, it's 40% on average. So I think we're taxed enough. In fact, it's the taxation that's really preventing jobs from occurring, in my opinion. That has to be lowered so that people take the risks with their capital and make businesses. It's businesses that make jobs. So I'm not talking about raising tax, but I am talking about having the federal government make major cuts. We're talking a third or more of cuts so that we can balance the budget. Well, when that happens, there's going to be incredible need because so many people in our nation are dependent upon what comes out of Washington, D.C. So we can't just let that happen. There's going to be major need. Who's going to meet that need? Well, we got to go back 100 years in our history and see how it was churches, it was nonprofits, it was synagogues, other nonprofits and so on that met human needs, and they did it person to person. We can go back to 200 years ago to England, where, in fact, they face some of the same sorts of issues, not the major economic issues, but there's a guy named William Wilberforce. You know that name?
Yes, I've read some stuff on him, yes.
He was a member of Parliament, and William Wilberforce had two major goals. One of those was to eliminate the slave trade, and two was to reform the manners of the people of England. Now, when I hear the word manners, I think, okay, we want to teach everyone to drink tea with their pinky up in the air. No, no, no. We're talking about reforming the hearts of the people of England. And it's just fascinating a book. I really recommend it for your listeners. Practical Christianity, you know, is the title that he wrote. And in there he says, the real problem with England are the people's hearts. They're selfish. There's selfishness at the heart of us. I want for me, and whether it's the rich, whether it's the poor, whether it's the middle class, there's a sense that it's all about me. Yeah, I want my neighbor to sacrifice, but forget me. Well, he said that's got to change, and what's got to change the heart. And he used the word public spirit to fight that. We need public spiritedness. That's what we had in 1776. That's what we had in World War II. We had a bit of that around 9/11 in this country. We got to do that again, and that's part of our call, is to go toward selflessness in our hearts and our lives.
Randy Heckman, everybody who meets you and around you says, this is a special man. This is a Renaissance man. But as they listen to you, a lot of people think, you're a Don Quixote from Man of La Mancha. Uh-huh. To dream, yeah, the impossible dream.
Yeah, that's good, Jack.
Okay, enough of that. Enough
that's
of
good.
That. Or you're a Pollyanna. You're a dreamer. Come on.
All right.
The reality in this country is Charlie Sheen. He's never been on the stage in his life in a theater. Fox Theater right across the street here. He says, I'm going to have a show within 12 minutes. It's sold out. He doesn't play. He doesn't perform.
Nope.
Nobody knows what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's America.
Yeah. No, that is
Don
America.
Quixote, what do you say?
Well, okay, what are our alternatives? We can just let this thing happen. We can slide over this cliff to oblivion. I refuse to accept that. I absolutely refuse. As a father, as a grandfather, as a man who loves this country, and we've been given as people, we've been given this incredible heritage that people have died for, that they have prayed for, that they have longed for, and they've given us this treasure, and we're just going to squander it and throw it away. I refuse to accept that, number one. Number two is, what's the answer? How do we get this selflessness? Well, it happened in England. Actually, England was able to prevent, because of what William Wilberforce and others did in England, they were able to prevent the tragedy that happened just across the English Channel in France, where the revolution ended up in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, because they changed hearts, and that was really through religious revival. Now, again, as a U.S. senator, I don't have authority over that, but what we need is to turn the churches and families and people loose in this country, to turn us back to God. I think a Benjamin Franklin statement back at the Constitutional Convention when they were deadlocked. He said, if a sparrow cannot fall from a tree without God's knowledge, how can a nation rise without his blessing? I mean, we need to cry out to God to help us at this time and to change our hearts. And then if we see our neighbors sacrificing, and we say we all have to do this, I think we'll be willing to do it together. No one wants to do it separately. But if together we're willing to go through this for the sake of our kids and our future, I think we can do this. And I think we will do this too.
We're talking to Randy Heckman, a.k.a. Don Quixote. And I'm Jack Crisula, the voice of Man of La Mancha. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Randy Heckman, who's just announced his candidacy for U.S. Senate from Michigan. If you want to learn more about him, Randy Heckman, H-E-K-M-A-N, 2012.com. Randy Heckman, 2012.com. Randy, when we were very young.
Long ago, Jack. Long ago.
I think it was January 20th, 1961.
Yep, I remember.
This John F. Kennedy,
yep,
gives this inauguration speech. Ask not.
Ask not what your country will do for you. Ask what you will do for your country, he said. And that was so well stated. In other words, we have to not just say, okay, what can I get from Washington? What can I get from Lansing? But what can I give? What do I need to give? And we have to be there. We have to be there if we're going to turn this thing around. Every one of us. This cannot be solved from Washington, cannot be solved from Lansing. It's going to be solved from Main Street. Every one of us is going to be involved in this thing at some level.
Speaking of that, you say that government has to scale back and nonprofits have to scale up.
Absolutely. That must happen because there will be incredible need. And who's going to meet that need? Again, 100 years ago in this country, that was how the need was met. As people got off the boats in New York Harbor, they were met by nonprofits, churches, synagogues, different people of faith or non-faith, but people who cared about others and helped these folks move to mainstream. They said, look, some of it was tough love. They said, look, if you're going to get support from us, you're going to have to, as men, you're going to have to chop wood from other poor people. If you're a woman, sew some clothes for other poor. They said, no, we don't want to do that. Just give us the handouts. They said, no, that's not going to work that way. That works. We need human-to-human contact to help people move from poverty to where they can actually work. And so that there's going to have to be incredible ability to do that. But again, nonprofits are going to shake in their boots. Say, how in the world are we going to afford this? I'm not talking about government paying money to the nonprofits. I'm talking about citizens saying, what if we all tithe, truly gave 10% of our gross income to a nonprofit of our choice? And not just our money, but our time as well. What if every one of us said, okay, I'm going to find a nonprofit, whether it's Red Cross or whatever, I'm going to give 1 or 2 hours a week to that. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take that if we really care about our kids and about the future of this country.
I quote, you say, I want to be a messenger of change, an arrow to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Washington, D.C., they're going to put arrows in you trying to talk this kind of stuff.
Okay, again,
how would you be successful?
Well, again, God plus one is a majority. And again, I don't claim to walk on water, never have, never will. I make many, many mistakes. But I sense the call of God on us that are in this particular direction. And I believe there's probably many others across this country, likewise, that in answer to the prayers of people are just moving. And I believe that there's going to be a growing movement and message to Washington, not just through me, but through many people. And I really believe that we're going to see that change made. Again, the alternative is not acceptable. The alternative is to give up. I refuse to give up. We must refuse to give up in despair.
You're a healer. You're a messenger to bring people together. But the animosity between the two parties in this country right now is arguably worse than it's ever been.
I know it. And that's unacceptable. I hate party politics. I despise it. We are one nation, under God, indivisible, it says in our pledge. We need to be that, not just say that at ball games. We are one nation. We have to forget our party problems and issues, and we have to work together with our president. We have to pray for our leaders, and we have to work with our leaders, and regardless of where they come from. And it really is like World War II, where you got to forget differences. We have a common threat, and we have to work together.
A week or two ago, Farhad Zakari, the young guy on CNN, wrote the feature article for Time magazine. It was on the cover, Are America's Best Days Behind Us?
Mm-hmm.
I had given you a copy
right.
a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think America's best days are behind us?
Well, if we give up, they definitely are. If we don't give up, if we make it through this challenge, see, you grow through challenge. No challenge, and you just kind of idle away, and you get soft. But I think this challenge could be the spark to move us ahead. I mean, there are innovations that we have not had time to talk about today, and that's fine, but there are innovations in science that await us. There's innovations in medicine that await us. What we need to have is hopefulness. We need to be able, again, to work together. We need to be in prayer. We need to call out to God to bless us, even though in many ways maybe we don't deserve it as a nation, but He is a gracious God. And we need to band together and work together. And I really believe that the best days of America could be in front of us, and that would be certainly my hope. That's what I'm going to work toward. I want that for my kids. I want that for future generations. I want that for all of our kids.
Speaking of God, recently, Bill Pulte, the founder of Pulte Homes and Clark Durant Cornerstone Schools and other things, have really been going around the country talking about that the only hope for America is for us to get back on our knees and pray to God.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally believe. And I think of Abraham Lincoln back in 1863. He called our nation to a day of fasting and prayer. And he says, you know, that we've been the beneficence we received from God so much from Him, from His hand, and yet we've forgotten Him. And He called our nation to go back to Him, to that hand that has led us and fed us and cared for us. And I think it's time that our leadership called us to times to seek God. I mean, we have it on our coins, but we got to have it on our hearts. God has been the best friend of America, and he wants to continue to be that, but we have to make him our best friend as well.
You're very humble. In the creed, not my will but thine be done. Mm. Another way of saying is, let go and let God. How does one learn to surrender to God?
Well, it's taken me 63 years, and I'm still fighting him many times. It's a daily choice. In fact, Christ said, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but he who loses his life for my sake will save it. And so there's a one-time thing where you give your life to God, but in another sense, there's a daily, not me, but Jesus, not me, but him. I'm going to follow him. And so how do you learn to do it? I think he allows trials to come in our life, and trials give us a chance to choose whether I live for me or whether I live for him. At the end of the day, life goes a lot better when we live for him and not for me.
Randy Heckman, as our time winds down this evening, could you lead us with a closing prayer for our country?
I'd love to do it. Dear God, we just love you, and we thank you for what you've done in our nation for so many years. We thank you for helping us survive through so many turmoil, so many problems in our nation. And through wars, through problems, through catastrophes, hurricanes, and everything else, we thank you for your grace to us and just for the economic benefits that we've had. And we live in such plenty here. We really do ask, Lord, that you will help us to really bind together as people again, to put away party preference, to say we are one nation under you, and that we will work together again for the sake of our future, for the sake of our children, for the sake of our grandchildren. God, we thank you again for what you've done, but we just pray that we would obey you, that we'd follow you, that we'd pursue you with all that we are. We thank you that when we do that, that you will bring your blessing to us and bring healing to our nation, even as you've promised in Scripture. So we thank you, and we ask this all in Christ's name. Amen.
Randy Heckman, as you take on the biggest challenge of your life, our prayers go out with you. Don Quixote, keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack. Good being with you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.